Well, we just made it through another one. Time when all the turkeys come out and people are ravenous. Of course, I'm talking about Black Friday. That yearly event when millions of people hit the road in favor of shopping malls and favorite stores, and maybe millions of more hit the internet to fill their shopping carts on what we know as the biggest shopping day of the year. And by the way, I now understand that it's not just Black Friday, it's Black Friday weekend. So it's still going on. Maybe some of us or all of us participated in that in one shape or form or another. There are some great deals. There's some great deals, and it's great for business owners. And if you're a business owner today, you probably know that to be true. In fact, we think Black Friday really stands for that, right? That these businesses will be in the black because of this one day and this season, right? So it becomes this thing for us that is a thing that's good, almost a frenzied start to a Christmas and holiday season. Isn't that what Black Friday is all about? Actually, it's not. At least it wasn't. Did you know this? The original way Black Friday was used was not a term of frenzied prosperity, but of disappointment. A trade magazine in the 50s called it Black Friday, first of all, because so many of their workers would get sick, well, call out sick on the Friday after Thanksgiving, that they thought there was like the Black Plague had just taken over the place, wiped out half the company. So in other words, it was a term not of prosperity, but of despair. It was a term of slowing down, of not doing what one was supposed to do. In fact, then it carried on to police officers in Philadelphia who called it Black Friday because everyone was out on the streets and in such frenzied behavior that it was horrible for them. It became Black Friday. It was something that was bad. It was something that you did not want. And yet, in turn, somehow we've turned it into something that is good. Isn't it amazing how we can convince ourselves that something is other than it initially was? Our text today from Isaiah chapter 7, we have this king named Ahaz. And I want to do a little history study because this, likely when we hear this, O come Emmanuel, ransom captive Israel, we sort of sing right through it, or we focus on the word Emmanuel, God with us, and that's appropriately so. But it's interesting that this New Testament passage that really talks about Joseph and what the angel says to him in a dream is really based on this Old Testament promise of God to this man and this king named Ahaz. And so I want to dig into that for a little bit as we unpack what this is really all about. See, King Ahaz was a king where everything was going wrong. And yet he convinced himself that it wasn't. It was a little bit like Black Friday becoming this thing that we convince ourselves is something different. King Ahaz, everything was going wrong, but he convinced himself otherwise. Let me just tell you what's going on. In the 8th century BCE, the nation of Israel is really two nations. Okay, they were one at the start, but by then they were two. There was Israel, the 10 tribes in the north, and there was Judah, the two tribes that was really named after Judah, the tribe of Judah in the south. In fact, when we talk about the Jews, we get that from Judah, right? The Judahites is where we get that phrase. And what happened is they had split. They got mad at each other. They felt like they were taking advantage of each other, and they split into two, and they did not like each other at all. In fact, both of them believed that they were sort of the inheritors of the promise of God, the real blessing of God and the legitimate heir to those claims. It was maybe a little bit like the United States in the Civil War, the North and the South, both kind of claiming that they held the center of what it meant to be America. In fact, things got so bad, and this happened just before this passage in Isaiah, that Israel, the northerners, teamed up with Aram, who was one of their enemies, to attack and sack Jerusalem, Judah, to try to make them subservient to them. It's like one brother getting together with one bully to attack the other brother. You can imagine that, but then we hear what Ahaz does. Ahaz says, oh, okay, well, if you're going to play that way, he goes to Assyria, who was the superpower of the day, basically gives them all the gold from the temple, all the silver that they had, kind of as protection money, And Assyria comes and wipes out Aram, and then ultimately wipes out their own brothers, Israel, and drives them into captivity, right? It feels a little bit like you're at Thanksgiving dinner, you get in an argument with your family, and you get so mad that you call the Russians to take them out. That feels like what is going on here, right? Everything is out of control. Ahaz might have won the day, but he's a vassal to Assyria. He's given away the farm. He's out of control. Everything is bad. But here's the rub of it. He thinks it's great. He convinces himself it's great. This day that was sort of a Black Friday is now like the best day for them to celebrate. He becomes enamored with his big bully buddy Assyria. Their wealth, their way of doing things. He even practices child sacrifice. He sacrifices one of his own sons because that's what they did in Assyria. He sees this Assyrian altar, and he is so enamored with it, he wants it built to the exact specifications in the temple in Jerusalem. He moves the temple to God over to the side, and he builds an exact replica of the Assyrian one for them to worship on. He's a slave. He has given himself and his country to this power. And yet he doesn't talk about it like it's bad. He thinks this is good. He is completely redefining reality, looking for hope and life in something that actually started out as death. He convinced himself otherwise. He tricked himself to say that this Black Friday was actually something good. Well, think about us now. What Ahaz did, certainly on a different scale. We're not going to sell out our brothers to the Russians. But we do kind of do that sometimes, it seems to me, with this time of the year that we call Advent. In other words, we can completely redefine its meaning for us and change what it's all about at this time of the year. We can turn it from the meaning and the gift and the hope to a frenzy of lights and bells and tinsel and even getting the best deals. It's well known that the Christmas season seems to appear earlier and earlier, right? It's something called holiday creep, which itself is creepy, just the way we talk about it, right? There's this sense that this is what really drives Christmas. It's retail. This is funny. I saw this picture in the Chicago Tribune. This is a Hobby Lobby on August 9th of this year. And we know it's true. And every year, of course, we look forward to our time with our family and all the trappings of the season and all that. But who among us doesn't feel like there are a few emotions that might be creeping in that seem to go exactly opposite of what the bells and the whistles tell us to be? Right? One is stress. Tell me if this sounds familiar. How am I going to get all the presents, often that I can't afford? Will they like them? And what if they don't? And the parties and the schedule. And how will I make this the perfect Christmas for my kids so that they will remember this day for the rest of their lives? Right? We convince ourselves that that is what is important, right? We sort of give ourselves over to a Black Friday faith more than anything else. Another emotion for many, I think, is loss. Loss, which seems like an unwelcome guest at the Christmas season. The fact is, right, when everything is supposed to be merry and bright and tinsely, to be unsettled, to miss someone that we love who may not be here anymore, frankly, to be less than anything but a Santa's cheery elf-like person, you all of a sudden are like this super downer, and no one wants to be around you. Our world places so much hope, it seems to me, in happiness and decked halls that we forget that the reality is that often life is hard, and the longings for wholeness in us go very deep. Longings that are masked by Black Fridays and the holiday cheer that Christmas has often simply thinly become. We can even forget what's really true, that God says, I will be with you in all of it. And because of that, we do not have to fear. That we actually can sit in this season with expectation and hope, with longing and prayer to prepare for a new day that will dawn among us. That instead of having a Black Friday faith, that we're invited to claim an Advent faith. And that was true for King Ahaz. It did not have to be that way. Instead of fearing for his existence, selling his soul to his enemies, being lured by the tiny and shiny, glitzy new things in Assyria, God offered him an alternative, and that's this: to believe in the fact that God would be present. How are you going to know that, Ahaz? Well, Isaiah, the prophet, says this: look, the young woman is with child and shall bear a son, and you shall name him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. Ahaz, Isaiah says, God is sending you a sign. In the midst of all this, in your longing for your relief, in your longing for protection, in your longing to be loved, God sends you a sign, a son that's going to be named Emmanuel. And he, by the time he's just a few years old, these nations that are against you, they will be no longer. I will be with you. And this boy named Emmanuel is a sign for you. If you only believe it. If you only believe it. Well, guess what? Ahaz did not. He did not believe in the promise of God. He instead chose the promise of power and human pride and self-will and the glitz and glamour. And in so doing, he missed this opportunity to live in the hope and the longing of God's promise for him. Which is why it's so beautiful and so timely that a young man, some 700 years later, this Jew named Joseph, engaged to a woman named Mary, hears these same words, this same promise in a dream. Remember where Joseph is. He's in heartbreak. He's just heard that Mary is pregnant. And so he is going to bed saying, how am I going to divorce her quietly so as not to cause scandal on her because I love her? And he goes to bed, and yet he hears these exact same words, these promise. She will bear a son. You're to name him Jesus. All this took place to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet. Look, we heard these words. The virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall name him Emmanuel, which means God is with us. And then look at what Joseph does. When Joseph woke from his sleep, he did what the angel of the Lord commanded him. Now, I think sometimes we think of that and go, well, duh, an angel spoke to him. He's got to do what the angel commanded him to do, right? But actually, I wonder if it's something much deeper. I wonder if he knew the story of his people, and he knew what his ancestor Ahaz did not do, which is trust in the promise of God and where it got them. And instead, what does Joseph do? He hears those words. He's reminded of that promise. And he steps into this belief, unlike Ahaz, that God will show up for him and for his world. He would not give in to the tin and the tinsel of the world. He is going to give himself over to this God who shows up for him. O come, Emmanuel, an Advent faith. One of the oldest songs of this season we have is this one that we sung, O come, Emmanuel, sung by monks in the 7th and 8th centuries. And these words are of longing and hope. And they tell us a little bit of the story of Ahaz and Joseph. O come, Emmanuel, ransom captive Israel. Remember, they were ransomed. That mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God appear. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel, shall come to you, O Israel. O come, desires of nations bind in one the hearts of all mankind. O bid our sad division cease and be yourself our King of peace. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to you, O Israel. It's in the midst of this longing and loss, in the midst of a season of stress and fear and failure, it's in the midst of trouble and tribulation that we have hope because we have an Emmanuel, God who is with us. And friends, that's the meaning of this season. Yes, Black Friday deals, perfect presents, eggnog, elves on shelves, all great, all nice. But let us not let those things get in the way of the real meaning of this Advent, that God has come to end our divisions, that God has come to heal our minds and our bodies and our spirits, to give us wholeness of peace. And so let us not jump too soon. Let's wait till the bread is completely cooked. Let's sit in the longing. Let's know what is to come. And let's breathe in the hope. For that's what it means not to have a Black Friday faith, but an Advent one. And that is a gift that God gives us this season. Amen.